Welcome to Radio Times. I'm Tracy Matisek, in for Marty Moscowane. Human trafficking is a multi-billion dollar business, and that's just in the United States. It's also considered to be one of the fastest growing criminal industries in the world. The United Nations estimates that 27 million people worldwide are being sold for labor, sex, and other exploitative practices every year. The average age of a girl forced into prostitution in the U.S., 13. Pennsylvania lawmakers are considering legislation that would make human trafficking, including sex trafficking, easier to prosecute and would also provide protection instead of punishment for victims. Similar legislation has been introduced in states across the country as well as in Washington, D.C. This hour, we're taking stock of efforts to fight sex trafficking in our region, including how to support victims. We'll check in with Pennsylvania State Senator Stuart Greenleaf and the head of New Jersey's nonprofit Polaris Project a little later, but we begin with two guests who are on the front lines of our region's battle against sex trafficking. Mary DeFusco is Director of Training and Recruitment for the Defender Association of Philadelphia. She has worked with victims of commercial sexual exploitation for many years and is the co-founder of Dawn's Place and the Project Dawn Court, which help women survivors of sex trafficking. Mary, welcome to Radio Times.
Thank you, Tracy.
And Shay Rhodes is an attorney at Graff & Associates and an advocate for human trafficking victims. She's the interim executive director of New Directions for Women, which is a transitional home for women who are coming out of prison. She's also a former assistant district attorney for the city of Philadelphia. Shay, welcome to Radio Times.
Thank you for having me.
So human trafficking and sex trafficking in particular is not a new phenomenon by any means, but it seems that we're hearing about it much more lately. Shay, why is that, that it seems to be getting more attention in recent years?
I think that the anti-trafficking movement is really bringing this to light, and more people are becoming educated about it. I think that historically, prostitution has been looked at as the oldest profession. You get lots of jokes surrounding that, and that it's an accepted practice. Oh, boys will be boys. And I think that people are starting to realize that you mentioned in your opening that the average age of entry into prostitution in the United States is 13. That's in fact correct, but it's trending lower. It's actually trending lower. The internet has made it incredibly easy to purchase a child, a young adult, for sex. And I think that as America becomes educated on the subject, we're realizing that this is not a profession and that individuals are not choosing to do this, especially not children.
Well, and I think that's the issue, Shay, because people think about prostitution, they think about prostitutes, they think about someone who is maybe trying to pay for a drug habit, that they have made a decision to go down that road. And yet it sounds like so many are there not by choice, but are being forced into that kind of work.
And that's correct. And I like to ask people, please stop saying things like, she's just trying to find a way to pay for her drugs. If she's being trafficked, she's being pimped out. Her pimp is demanding that she have sex up to 30 times a day with strangers. The drug addiction comes after. It's a way of coping. It's a way of disassociating, of not being there while you're literally violated 30 times a day.
Well, Mary DeFusco, you have brought some incredible photos of women over a two-year period from the time that they first sort of enter the system and then about year or 2 years later, and the difference is unbelievable, and that's where drugs and other things come into play, correct?
It is true, and what I find amazing about these photos, I mean, they are horrifying when you look at them. You see the woman in the first photo, the second photo, the first arrest, the second arrest. These are eight arrests within a two-year period. That woman in the first photo looks fine. She's healthy. Her eyes are clear. There's no sign of drug addiction. So when you show these photos in the community is horrified by the last few photos that show the devastation. But what horrifies those in criminal justice, what shocks them, are the first photo, because I think there's a myth going around in criminal justice that, well, this is all about drugs. It's all about a drug addiction. And that kind of helps us not to see the reality, which is that drug addiction is not the root cause. The root cause of this is the prostitution, the sexual abuse, the trauma, and the drugs are used to self-medicate, for lack of a better term. And if you don't address the root cause, you're never going to be able to get help for the women.
Certainly, Mary, each woman's story is different, but I imagine that over the years you've seen some common themes as you've talked with and worked with and helped some of these women. What are some of those common themes that you're seeing in their stories?
Well, what I see is a very common theme is that you have a young girl who has been sexually abused at home or by someone she cares about and trusts. And that leads her, coupled usually with some form of homelessness or helplessness, and that leads her to think, well, you know, this time, when I do this, I'll get some money and I have some value because I'm getting $20, so I have value, because this is a person who feels valueless. And I remember when we first started the project on court, on the very first day, the judge asked one of the young ladies, she was 22 years old, she had no drug addiction, she was beautiful, she was in jail. And the judge said to her, do you know why you do this? I'm not asking you to tell me, I just want to know if you know. And she said, oh no, judge, I know, and I don't have any problem telling you. She says, I went to Neshaminy High School in Bucks County, I was in Reading Olympics, I was a straight A student, and I taught underprivileged kids how to read. And my first boyfriend pimped me out, she said, and then I got addicted to the money. And we used to think, well, addicted to the money. But when you look into this and you speak to sexual trauma experts, what you'll find out is that they get addicted to the feeling of power because they've been feeling so powerless. So this time they're doing the tricking. You know, they'll relive the trauma, but it won't hurt them this time. That's what the thinking is. But, of course, you need the drugs or the alcohol or even to mentally disassociate, which causes mental illness, to be able to go through with it.
Yeah. And so often it is that boyfriend, Shay, right, or someone who comes into a young woman's life and seems to be someone who can help them.
Sure. I mean, in the world of prostitution, the pimp is an individual that the girls who are attached to him or associated with him call him daddy. Mm. So what Mary said is correct, and the statistics show that between 55 and 90% of individuals that are being prostituted or sexually exploited were sexually molested before they ever even hit puberty. You know, I am a former prosecutor, and I've talked to my friends who have been long-term rape prosecutors, and I would suggest that it's actually closer to 90% because of the underreporting of child sexual molestation.
Yeah.
She's running from that, so she becomes homeless, and I believe the FBI has statistics that show within 48 hours of running away, and it's, I believe, if you run away more than three or more times, you are very likely to be trafficked. But within 48 hours of running away from home, you'll come into contact with a pimp. They're predators. They prey on individuals who have a vulnerability. And that's what is just so incredible about these individuals. They are predators. So she's running to an individual. And in that world, he is daddy. And daddies take care of their children. Mm-hmm. And it's a very twisted, sort of, you can't call it a family, but that's what they call it. It's just sick and twisted, and he loves her, and she's run away from something that's so awful. Anything that he does of her because he loves her so much or does to her and asks of her is not really that bad.
And Mary, I want to talk about that a little bit more. Just some of the things that happen, not just, I mean, people tend to think we see this in big cities and in seedy neighborhoods, but it's much more insidious than that, isn't it?
Oh, absolutely true. I mean, you'll see that although our women are being arrested in certain sections of the city, that a great many of them came from the suburbs, came from really nice homes that you just wouldn't believe it. When you meet their family members, you just absolutely cannot believe. You can't even believe they belong to the same family. And I deal with women who are adult women, some of them in their 30s, their 40s, even their 50s. These are women who many years before were trafficked in or were in because they had been sexually abused and they're reliving their trauma. And once they're in, they don't know how to get out. Yeah. They're trapped and they want desperately to get out. A study was done, a meta-analysis over five countries. The United States was one of those countries. And in it, they discovered that 92% of individuals involved in prostitution wanted to escape immediately. We think of prostitution as a victimless crime. Well, you don't need to escape a victimless crime. But these people wanted to escape, and they didn't know how.
Mm. So for someone who maybe suspects or knows a young woman who might be vulnerable to something like this, Shay, what are the signs to look for that a young woman perhaps is a target or is being trafficked or is at least being looked at for something like that?
I have two nieces. They're 17. And I always, and I speak publicly in a lot of high schools, and I have, you know, a tremendous, I think, in with the teenage girl community. And it, I don't want to say it goes hand in hand with bullying, but I always say to my nieces, you girls better make sure that I don't find out there's a girl in the cafeteria at lunch who's sitting at a table alone. Make sure you include her. You girls, and I'm speaking very generally, tend to be judgmental. And you'll say if a girl has multiple boyfriends and very inappropriate sexual behavior, the term promiscuous comes up. You need to step back and ask yourself, why is it that she's engaging in that behavior? Is she looking to, you know, for validation? Is something happening to her in her home? You know, why is she looking for attention in ways that are incredibly unhealthy? That's the type of girl that we need to be looking at. I've spoken to some of my friends in federal law enforcement, and one of the things that is incredibly prevalent in the suburbs is, you know, pills. Kids are taking pills. Kids are selling their own pills. They're getting addicted to prescription medication that can be found in most of our medicine cabinets, and that's just not enough anymore. So they're looking for harder street drugs, like heroin, and they getting involved with the drug dealer. He's now her boyfriend, and he's then going to pimp her out because he's not going to pay for her $300 a day heroin habit.
So, Mary, talk about the point that you made earlier that so many of these victims have a great desire to get out. They have no idea how to do it. What happens to them, and how can they extricate themselves from a situation like that?
Well, first and foremost, what happens is that the women also believe that this is a question of drug or alcohol addiction. You know, I'd like to quit, but I don't know how to quit because I have a drug or alcohol addiction. So they'll go into drug and alcohol treatment, but they're not able to discuss. I mean, you're not going to sit there in a group of people who are there for drug addiction and talk about how you were molested by your father at the age of five. That's not going to happen. So they'll go into drug and alcohol treatment, and it will either be temporarily helpful or it won't be helpful at all. And they'll try again, and they'll fail. And they always think that it's their fault. It's not their fault. They're just not addressing the underlying trauma. What happened to them as a child is not unrelated, as they think, to what happened to them later on as an adult. So the first and foremost need they have is sexual trauma recovery, and then you can address all the other things such as GED, job placement training, and so forth.
We have much more to talk about in our discussion of sex trafficking and what's being done to address it. We'll take your calls and questions as well when Radio Times comes right back.
April 15th may be months away, but now is the time to get your last-minute tax deduction. Support WHYY now to help us end the year on a high note. Whether you give a sustaining gift, have your employer match your gift, donate your car, or make a direct IRA rollover to WHYY, time is running out to make a tax-deductible donation. Explore the many ways to support WHYY. Call 1-888-345-WHYY or visit whyy.org/support.
It's that wonderful time of the year here at Sound Opinions when we bake some cookies, light up the Yule log, and welcome our holiday music guru, Andy Serzan.
Andy's back with a sack full of new songs, and this year it's rock and pop Christmas.
Father Christmas, give us some money. We got no time for your silly toys.
This week on Sound Opinions, it's holiday tunes from the likes of the Kinks, the Band, and more.
Tonight at 10 on WHYY.
I'm Jeremy Hobson. Next time on Here and Now, our pop culture critic Renee Graham joins us and says the most exciting films are not coming from Hollywood, they're coming from Korea.
They're incredibly original. They cross genres, there's a lot of dark humor, There's action. I just think they're fantastic.
That's next time on Here and Now from NPR and WBUR Boston.
This afternoon at 1 on WHYY.
Welcome back to Radio Times. I'm Tracy Matisak, filling in for Marty Moskowain. We are talking about human trafficking and specifically sex trafficking. We've been talking about how prevalent the situation is, much more than many people think, and also what's being done to address it, particularly here in our region. Our guests are Mary DeFusco. She is Director of Training and Recruitment for the Defender Association of Philadelphia and has worked for over 30 years with women who have been caught up in sex trafficking. We're also talking with Shay Rhodes, who is an attorney and a human trafficking advocate, as well as interim executive director of New Directions for Women. At this point, we shift gears just a bit to welcome Senator Stuart Greenleaf to our conversation. He, of course, is a Republican state senator who's been representing Montgomery and Bucks County, the 12th district, in the state Senate since 1978. He is also chairman of the Senate Judiciary Committee. Senator Greenleaf, welcome to Radio Times.
Thank you. Thank you for inviting me.
Well, you've been involved with legislation to make it easier to prosecute those who are involved in sex trafficking and in the selling of other people, and also to provide some protections for victims. Tell us about the status of your legislation and what it's all about.
Well, the Polaris Project came to me in 2010 and asked me to look into this issue, and they informed me and educated me to the issue, and so it would offer. The Senate passed a resolution to come up with solutions of how can we turn this around and protect these victims. And they came up with a report in 2012 and introduced legislation thereafter to start to treating these victims as victims and provide some care for them, like providing defenses that they can't be charged with prostitution if they've been coerced into this. I mean, what we've done is these are young individuals, young children who may be a runaway, and we know that one out of three runaways within 48 hours are ensnared by a pimp and then coerced into and drugged into sexual trafficking. And we in society have to stop looking at them as being voluntarily involved in this. These children are victims of Megan's Law predators. That's what the pimps are. I don't really refer to them as pimps anymore. They're sexual, violent, habitual predators of our children. And this legislation will begin to treat them the way they should be treated. And there are very severe penalties that were set forth in this legislation for them. And then to start looking, as I said, looking at the children as victims and providing services for them, diversionary programs, defenses that you can't prosecute someone who's a victim of sexual and sexual trafficking, and to treat them like they should be treated.
Senator, is it true that the victims tend to be prosecuted much more often than the pimps themselves?
Well, the information that I have, it seems like that's it, because they're the one out in the front. They're the ones that they come into, the law enforcement comes into encounter them first, and so they've always put the emphasis on those children, those young adults who have been caught into this for years and can't get out of it because they are intentionally addicted to drugs. They are coerced. The pimp acts as a father figure. Sometimes they've left homes because they were abused, and all types of ways they use this process to bind them and to enslave them. And so we have to stop that. I mean, it's been going on for centuries, so it's nothing new, but it's like we have to change this. This is nothing but, when I noticed that one of the panelists said that they come out and they say that it's their fault. I remember 25 years ago, I started to hold hearings on child abuse, sexual abuse, and that's what I heard. I held those hearings all over the state, and I heard the same thing. When you had children that were saying that it was their fault, they brought it on themselves, that's not the case at all. And society has bought into that. So we have to change. We want to change that with this legislation, and make sure that we give the care that we need to give for the victims, and the deterrence that we have to provide for those that are the sexual violent offenders.
Well, and I'd like you to address that, Senator. What is in your legislation, or perhaps other legislation that's pending in Harrisburg, to address the perpetrators themselves, to perhaps make it easier to prosecute them?
Right. It is Senate Bill 75, and the Senate passed it last week with a unanimous 50-0 vote, and it's now going to be referred to the House Committee, Judiciary Committee. I know they're sympathetic towards this, and they'll take a look at it, and I'm optimistic that they'll pass it and the governor will sign it. So we're very close to having a statute that will, first of all, define what sexual trafficking is. In Pennsylvania, we don't have that. We have a definition of what labor trafficking is, and that's a serious issue too, but we never passed a law specifically defining what sexual servitude is. This bill does do that, and also provides very serious first-degree felony for someone who is involved in human trafficking, and then also penalties for those people who patronize, but only sexual victims of sexual servitude, but only if they know or had this reckless disregard, that's what it says in the legislation, that they were victims of sexual servitude. So, and then also, there's if there are businesses or other groups that are involved in this. We recently had this in the Philadelphia area where there were some people that were brought here as labor servitude. And this bill would apply there as well. And it would also require and provide for forfeiture of all the assets of the individual organization used in the violation of this activity, revocation of professional licenses, and also civil suits will be allowed to be taken, brought to get by the victim against their enslaver. By the way, this is nothing but slavery, by the way. This is just another form of slavery. It's another form of child sexual abuse that we dealt with most recently, the last several years, in Megan's Law, which I'm the sponsor of. I can see that it's the same. It's just dealing with children that are a little bit older, and then they graduate and become adults, and they're still involved in it because they're still enslaved. It is truly slavery, and we, Pennsylvania, led the fight on the abolition of slavery, and we should take our rightful position in leading this fight on the state and national level.
Well, and Senator, you sound optimistic about the legislation making it through the House. What kind of time frame are we looking at that this piece of legislation might become law in Pennsylvania?
We have two-year sessions. We've just finished the first year of that 2 years. So I would anticipate the first part of this year. I would anticipate somewhere between January and June of this year it will be passed and into law.
Mm-hmm. Senator Stuart Greenleaf, thank you so much for the work that you're doing in this area and for taking time to be with us here on Radio Times.
Thank you.
And you are listening to Radio Times on WHYY. I'm Tracy Matisak, filling in for Marty Musk-Cohen. We would love to hear your comments and questions. We are talking about sex trafficking and some of the steps that are being taken to address it on multiple levels. The number to join our conversation is 888-477-9499. And we have been talking with our guests, Mary DeFusco, who is Director of Training and Recruitment for the Defender Association of Philadelphia. Shea Rhodes is an attorney and human trafficking advocate, and I'd love to hear your thoughts about this legislation that Senator Greenleaf has sponsored that sounds like it will soon become law, Mary.
Well, I'll tell you honestly, Tracy, my concern about legislation is I'm not a prosecutor. I've never been a prosecutor. I'm a defense attorney, and I see these victims when they are charged as criminals. And I see nothing in the legislation, unfortunately, for adult women that changes that. And I think it's a step in the right direction to view these people as victims and to do something when they're juveniles and make sure they're not charged with these crimes. But I think we need to go farther than that. I mean, New York State recognizes that they're victims. And in New York, if you can show to a judge that your prostitution convictions were as a result of trafficking, you can have them vacated. And I think that's true as well in Illinois now. And I think it's true in Maryland. So I'm glad that we have the recognition that these folks are victims. I think we need to go further in that direction. In Pennsylvania, after you've been convicted of prostitution three times, again, as an adult, it's a misdemeanor of the first degree, which means that you can be looking at a state sentence from 2.5 to 5 years at the state penitentiary. That doesn't make sense to me. What that means is that you've been victimized over and over again, and now you're going to get victimized again. So I'd like to see a change in how the adult women are treated, because that's my focus. I mean, I think it's very important that we begin with the children. I think this legislation, to the degree that it recognizes that these children are victims, is a definite step in the right direction. But let's not abandon them because a magic switch is flicked when they reach 18. They are still trapped. They're still in the slavery. And I totally agree with the senator with what he's saying. This is slavery. We need to do what we can to get them out.
Shea, is there any reason to believe that incarceration works, that it's helpful? I mean, we've been talking about these women now being prosecuted when they're in fact victims. Is there any reason to believe that that's helpful on any level?
As a prosecutor, you know, you're looking at, you know, statute, at sentencing guidelines, and in working very closely with Mary in the Project Dawn Court, the only thing that I think incarceration is ever helpful with is, you know, keeping a woman from hurting herself. And that's just, you know, not necessarily the best place to help her. Sometimes it is necessary because she's hurting herself. Do I think she's violent? Do I think the community needs to be kept safe from her? Absolutely not. Mm-hmm. One of the great things about this bill is it's, you know, we call it the three Ps, you know, the Anti-Trafficking Advocacy Work Group, which is comprised of, you know, all 11 of the coalitions throughout the state has been working really hard with Senator Greenleaf and his office on this bill. And it's the three Ps. It's calling for a law that prosecutors have that's easier to prosecute cases under, protection for the victims, and prevention. And one of the ways in which, you know, the prevention aspect happens is through the mandatory training of all law enforcement officers. People ask, why is this so difficult to find victims, you know, of human trafficking? If you're a robbery victim or a burglary victim, you're going to call 911 and report that you've been a victim of a crime. If you are a trafficking victim, and, you know, Mary may correct me if I'm wrong, but I cannot imagine a victim of human trafficking, and she's still a victim because she's not gotten out and become a survivor, is not going to call 911 and say, hey, come get me away from my pimp. So treating these trafficking victims as victims is something that's going to happen on the front lines. It's the police officers walking the beat in the high crime areas. The, you know, emergency room personnel, the guys that and the women that are the first responders, if somebody has overdosed, that drive the ambulances, those people need to be trained to recognize that they are, in fact, victims and that they're committing, you know, a crime. Prostitution is a crime on the books, but they're not being treated as criminals. They're being treated as victims of trafficking.
Let's go to the phones to Lansdale and Joshua. Welcome, Joshua, to Radio Times.
Hi, how are you?
Fine, thank you. Your comment or question for our guests?
Yes, my comment is I'm someone, and I'm giving the other side, the other insight, is I'm someone who pays for it, and I know that it's wrong. But it's I was inspired to call because you're talking about it, and I don't always. I need to hear this stuff. I need to hear how bad it is. I don't always, like, I don't think the people who pay for it really know how bad it is on the other side, and there's not enough talk about it. I'm educated. I know that it's wrong to do this. I have my own addiction, and this is something that I need to hear more of, so I know that it's really wrong.
Well, Joshua, thank you for calling and for being so candid and sharing that with us. Shay?
You know, Joshua, you have a lot of courage for calling in and admitting this, and thank you for that. I think that one of the biggest things that we need to do in society is shift this paradigm that, you know, she's dirty, she's engaging in this, and shift the paradigm over to look at the purchaser, the demand. You know, there are, they call them John schools in other parts of the country. There's one in San Francisco, California. There's one up in Brooklyn, New York. I've had the opportunity to visit, you know, that one. But the only way that these individuals are going to stop purchasing sex is if they're arrested for it. They know it's wrong. You heard him just say on the phone, I know it's wrong. I need to keep hearing this. I have my own addiction. And they need to be educated about trafficking. But we, as you know, as a greater society, need to look at our own communities and our own homes and our own churches and synagogues and, you know, where we work, and just say that it's not okay to purchase sex. Boys do not just get to be boys, and, you know, their activities just sort of swept under the rug as, you know, just in the course of the business day. They are violating another human being, and it's more often than not a child or a very young woman who is not doing this of her own volition.
Yeah. I think Joshua's call, Mary, is a good example of the benefit of increased awareness.
Yeah, I think it's great. I mean, I really want to commend Josh, because it takes a lot of guts to do that and to say to yourself, hey, this is wrong and I really shouldn't be doing this. And a lot of men, it seems to me, want to buy into the myth. They don't want to wake up to the reality. I was reading a column, I think it was Nicholas Kristof, some time ago in the New York Times, where he was interviewing a woman who was famous for foreign trafficking. She had been trafficked as a young girl in an Asian country. And she would say that as a 14-year-old girl, she would run up to U.S. soldiers and she would grab them by the arm and she would smile at them and she would say, I can't wait to have sex with you, because she was going to get tortured that night if she didn't have a certain amount of money. Well, the soldiers were so happy. They were like, wow, you know, why aren't American women like this? I mean, they were completely buying into that myth.
Wow.
And we do the same thing in our culture, unfortunately.
Much more to talk about in our discussion of sex trafficking, including solutions. Both of our guests have been involved in changing women's lives who have found themselves caught up in the sex trade. We'll talk about that and much more when Radio Times comes right back.
Widener Law supports WHYY. Widener Law alumni are serving as judges, corporate lawyers, government officials, and more. In addition to engaging in challenging courses, Widener Law students work on real cases in law clinics. A JD information session will be held on January 11th from 10 a.m. to 1 p.m. at the Delaware campus. Again, that's January 11th from 10 a.m. to 1 p.m. Registration is available online at law.widener.edu/admissions. Widener Leadership Works.
This is Terry Gross. Often when I'm interviewing people on Fresh Air, they give me a different way of looking at the world.
We all thought our bike was cold in the rain, that our fish was lonely in a fishbowl, that a leaf would be afraid of heights when it fell. It's just the way we looked at things.
Join us for new ways of looking at things on Fresh Air.
This afternoon at 3 and again tonight at 7 here on WHYY 91 FM.
We know that roughly 30% of us have some symptoms of insomnia. We know that there's a relationship between insomnia and depression, heart disease, auto accidents, and on. But many of us still brag that we don't really need much sleep. On the next Voices in the Family, understanding sleep and learning about effective non-medication treatments. Today at noon, here on WHYY-FM.
Welcome back to Radio Times. I'm Tracy Matisak, filling in for Marty Moskowain, and we are talking about sex trafficking and how it is a much bigger and more pervasive problem than most people think. It is not just a city problem, but it happens in the suburbs and rural areas all over the world, quite literally, and we have been talking about that and what's being done to address it. There are a number of organizations that have been actively involved in battling sex trafficking. One of them is the Polaris Project, and we have with us now Kate Keisel, who is director of the New Jersey version of Polaris Project. They, of course, are dedicated to fighting human trafficking. Kate, we want to welcome you to Radio Times.
Thank you so much for having me.
Well, it's good to have you with us. I don't know if you've been listening, but we were talking a little bit about some efforts to strengthen laws here in Pennsylvania against sex trafficking. Jersey, from what I understand, has some pretty strong laws on the books already.
Yes, well, one of the things that is really impressive about what's happening in New Jersey right now is a new piece of legislation that was passed on May 6th, signed into law by Governor Christie, called the Human Trafficking Prevention, Protection, and Treatment Act. And it's very recent, so this is something that we're still catching up and, you know, all the training and technical assistance that comes with new legislation that's happening right now. But it's created some really strong protections for survivors of human trafficking and also strengthened penalties as well.
Hmm. Tell us about the Polaris Project and what exactly you do.
So we're an eradication-focused organization, and we focus on comprehensively combating human trafficking. And really for us, what that means is we're looking at fighting human trafficking from every angle. So we have a series of different departments that work on systematically dismantling trafficking networks, as well as providing services to survivors. And what I do in our New Jersey office is I work with a fantastic team of clinicians, of case managers, and other individuals who are working to provide services for survivors of all forms of human trafficking. But in addition to that, we also run the National Human Trafficking Resource Center. We work on policy, so it was our policy team that was assisting in passing this legislation. We do strategic campaigns on different areas where we know there needs to be strengthened legislation, or perhaps we have something like Safe Harbor where kids are being criminalized. So we really kind of work on this from every angle.
Tell me, Kate, about the text messaging project. Sounds really interesting way to leverage technology in this battle.
Absolutely. So as we all know, human trafficking is very much being highlighted through technology, and people are being bought and sold using the internet, using different forms of technology. So one of the things that's been really important for Polaris is to kind of turn this paradigm and start using technology to fight trafficking. So earlier this year, what we did is we launched a text messaging campaign. So now, in addition to calling into the hotline, you can also text for emergency services and to connect. You can simply text Be Free, and you can be connected with a call specialist 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. And actually, one of the great things about the text messaging program is we're receiving emergency referrals in our New Jersey office from, you know, the tri-state area of individuals who are texting in for help.
And you can also, I would think, track where those calls are coming from, which is helpful for law enforcement as well.
Absolutely. So we pass on any of the tips that we receive in a confidential manner to law enforcement entities and to the appropriate unit. So as many of us know, law enforcement agencies are very, very large. And so it's very important that the tips get to the right place within that unit. So what we do is we work with specialized units from Homeland Security, Federal Bureau of Investigation, Attorney General's offices, and we pass on information about trafficking networks to assist in the prosecution and the cases that are being worked as well.
Hmm. And again, Kate, you can text Be Free. Is it B-E-F-R-E-E?
That's correct. Be Free.
Okay. All right. Kate Keisel, thank you so much for being with us. Kate is director of the nonprofit Polaris Project in New Jersey. And Kate, what's the number to text it to? Or is it, what's the number as well? with
the
Be
member
Free.
Of the National Human Trafficking Research Center. So, yeah, there's a couple of different ways that I think are important to really highlight of how you can reach out to the NHTRC. Obviously, as you mentioned, the first one is going to be using Be Free, right? So texting that. We also have an online resource system where you can receive training and technical assistance. You can look up red flags that are associated with human trafficking, and you can actually report tips right there online as well. And then the last is you can call the toll-free 24-hour hotline number, and we have over 180 languages that can be utilized at any given time. And that number is 1-888-373-7888.
Okay, and your website?
Is www.polarisproject.com.
Okay. Again, Kate Keisel, thank you for your work in this regard and for being with us on Radio Times.
Thank you so much.
So continuing our conversation about sex trafficking and the pervasive problem that it is, we mentioned before the break that our in-studio guests have much experience in working with women who have found themselves involved in the sex trafficking industry and have really seen some changed lives over the years. Mary, tell us about Dawn's Place.
Well, Dawn's Place is a wonderful program that I was fortunate enough to be involved in with a number of other co-founders. It is a program in a beautiful home here in Philadelphia that, and I think it's unique, at least in the state, possibly in the country, because it combines both foreign trafficked women and domestically pimped and prostituted women. So it can get foreign trafficked women from governmental agencies such as the Justice Department or ICE, and it gets local women from the jails or from a drug or alcohol program. It is a one-year program minimum for our women. They come in, they receive sexual trauma recovery therapy. In addition to that, if they have drug or alcohol addictions, they go out to receive drug or alcohol therapy. They receive job training, job placement, life skills training, you know, things that they just never got. And they learn to live in it's kind of a homey environment. They eat dinner together every night. And at one point we had three Indonesian women in there, and we had about, I think at that time, four women from the Philadelphia County Prisons. The Indonesian women didn't even speak English. But nonetheless, the Indonesian women taught them how to cook and how to clean, and they taught the Indonesian women how to speak English and how to ride septa. So they beautifully got along. It was incredible. It's always so wonderful to be in that house. And I always urge everybody to just go to ahomefordawn.org, www.ahomefordawn.org, and you can see like pictures of the interior. We never talk about the address or show the exterior because it is a safe house, but you can see how beautiful it is. And there's a whole bunch of information there. People always say, how can I help? There's a page on that as well. It's just a beautiful thing because you can actually see the faces that I showed you or the arrests, they reverse. Those same women who look like refugees from a war zone can go back. You see them, they come in, their faces are bright, they're happy, they're relaxed. They just look like totally different people. They're almost hard to recognize. Yeah. It's a beautiful thing.
And there's the court piece of this as well.
Well, the court piece is the same topic, which is to help women who are trafficked, pimped, and prostituted who want to get out of the life. But it's not related to Dawn's Place in that sense. But some of the women at Dawn's Place also belong to the Project Dawn Court. The Project Dawn Court is a court that offers a problem-solving court, such as drug courts and treatment courts in general, like veterans courts and so forth. But what it offers is sexual trauma recovery, as well as drug and alcohol treatment if the women need that. And they go through phases while they're in that court. And it is a one-year minimum again. And if they graduate successfully, what will happen is that particular case that they brought in of charging prostitution or drugs will be vacated. It will be dismissed. And then a year later, if they're not arrested or convicted of any crime, they will basically have that particular arrest expunged. Oh. I'd like to have them all expunged ultimately, but until the law changes, we do what we can.
What's the success rate been like so far for those who have graduated and had their records cleared?
Well, we don't have enough women having gone through yet for it to test to actually have statistics at this point, but we do have graduates who have returned. Like December the 10th was the last session of this court, and one of our graduates came up and just gave me a hug. She wanted to be there to support the other women. She just came back for no reason. She just was like, I want to give back. I was given two, and I want to give back. So,
and the difference, Shay, with programs like this one is that they're long term. I mean, it's not the, you know, go into drug rehabilitation for a little while and then come back, or you're in and out of jail back and forth. I mean, these kinds of programs take longer to get to the root causes, it sounds like.
They do. And I had, you know, the good fortune of being involved in formalizing the Project Dawn Court when I was an assistant district attorney. And when I left the DA's office, President Judge Nightfield asked me to stay on the oversight committee. So I'm involved in, you know, sort of the policy-making decisions that continue to affect the court and how we can move forward and hopefully be a model not just for the rest of the Commonwealth, but also for the United States and how to treat adult women who have multiple arrests. I mean, upwards of 40 arrests and convictions for prostitution. And we, you know, recently have been working on how are we going to treat our alumni, because we are starting to get quite a number of graduates. And, you know, like Mary said, they do want to come back, and they are a close-knit group of women who watch each other succeed, assist each other when they stumble and fall. And it's a really tremendous environment to be in. You know, you're watching women who have such an abhorrent attitude towards criminal justice and law enforcement. And, you know, they've been a defendant. They've been arrested. They've been in jail. They've more times than most of them can even count. And to watch them come full circle and, you know, realize, wow, there are people in criminal justice that want to help. And, you know, there is one long-term graduate whose record has been expunged, who I don't believe has missed a single Project Dawn Court in over 3 years. And I have to tell you that it just, to me, shows the strength that is built. If I were a defendant and, you know, have graduated from a court, I can promise you that I would probably never, ever again go near the criminal justice center, let alone sit in court, you know, sometimes 6 hours at a time and be a support for the other women around me. It's truly incredible, and it's really changing people's lives.
Yeah. Let's go to the phones quickly before we wrap up our program. We'll go to Souderton and Dan. Welcome, Dan, to Radio Times.
Hello, good afternoon.
Hi there. Your comment or question?
Yes, I want to thank you for, number one, taking the call, and just for the topic you're speaking on. It's very, very important. Yes, our organization is called Worthwhile, where I'm the executive director, and we started our work actually in India, looking for hot spots of where trafficking was, and really, you know, that is, India is a big area of issue and need, and so we worked on providing vocational training and skill sets that the women could use to get out of trafficking, but then also utilize to stay out of it. And so we've been working there. But then what we started to realize and hear more and more, which you're addressing today, is that the issue is here. It's at our doorstep, essentially. And, you know, we're also faced with the fact that this year is 150 years of freedom from slavery for the U.S. And we celebrate that, the Emancipation Proclamation, and yet slavery is in our own backyards. And so to credit Dawn's Place and the fact that there is a big movement to do something, one of the areas that we saw a lot of need in, and we work with the DA's office in Bucks County and also Congressman Fitzpatrick, was the need for housing. And so I just wanted, it's more of a comment and also just a remark to the great work that Dawn's Place is doing and the need for housing. We also are looking to launch a home, long-term housing in the Bucks County area for 2014, because a recent report that came out was called the National Survey of Residential Programs for Victims of Sex Trafficking, and that did a national study on what was available for trafficked victims. And for New Jersey and Pennsylvania, there was only one, and that one was Dawn's Place. So congratulations to them for having that availability. And also, it just goes to show the great need for the 14,000 new women that are introduced into our country every year, and the many more that are domestically trafficked. So, you know, I just wanted to thank you guys for making this such a needed topic to be discussed and brought up to the public.
Well, Dan, thank you for your call. Mary, you know all about the housing challenges. I saw you shaking
absolutely.
Your head in affirmation.
Thank you, Dan.
There.
It's totally true. And I should say this. Dawn's Place doesn't receive any governmental funding whatsoever. It has no sustained funding either. All of it is people donating. We've had religious organizations of sisters who have donated, and just individuals who have donated. And that's it. It is running purely on the goodness of people's hearts. And that's really why I give out that that website all the time, because I'm trying to get as many donations as possible. We desperately need it. And as he said, the need is great. And the huge need is housing. And there's nothing else out there, really.
Yeah. Shay, for people who are listening who just want to get involved in some way, who want to help as an individual, what advice do you have for them to join in this battle?
Well, in Pennsylvania, like I said before, we have a huge network of anti-trafficking coalitions. And they have worked together so closely as the advocacy working group. And there is an anti-trafficking coalition in Philadelphia, in Chester County, Montgomery County, Delaware County, Bucks County. In Lehigh County, it's called the VAST, V-A-S-T. It stands for the Valley Against Sex Trafficking. Berks County, there's the Harrisburg-York Coalition, the Lancaster Area Network, and the Southwestern Pennsylvania Anti-Trafficking Coalition, and there's also a coalition in Erie County. There, you know, whatever area you're living in, if you, you know, reach out to the coalitions, you can get involved. A lot of us speak publicly anywhere from a library to high schools to community groups. You know, if you want to get involved with Dawn's Place, again, Mary said, homefordawn.org. They take volunteers. They have a strong training in order to become a volunteer there. There are so many ways to get involved. But if I were to start, I would look into my community and find out, you know, who's involved in the anti-trafficking coalition there and get involved. Just go to a meeting.
I want to thank both of you for being with us and helping us understand what a big problem this is locally and what's being done to help it along. Mary DeFusco is Director of Training and Recruitment for the Defender Association of Philadelphia. Shay Rhodes, Attorney and Human Trafficking Advocate. Thank you both for being with us on Radio Times.
Thank you, Tracy.
Thanks.
Our producers today have been Susan Greenbaum, Patty McMahon, Debbie Builder, and Emily Bryant. And our engineer is Adam Staniszewski. And I'm Tracy Matisak, filling in for Marty Moscone.